The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joanna LaForgia from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting content from the November 2024 copy of Southern Living magazine, as well as something I was able to pick up at the beginning of the year from the online copy of their January-February issue. This week, we will hear from the Grumpy Gardener, and then a few things to look out for or to look forward to this summer. Both. Something to look out for and something to look forward to. All right. We'll start with At Home and the Grumpy Gardener by Steve Bender. Dear Grumpy, this may seem like a weird question, but here goes. Why are those little bumps on the outsides of potatoes called eyes? I don't believe spuds can see. Am I mistaken? And that's from Harold. Well, there are visionary artists and thinkers, but I've yet to encounter a visionary potato. That doesn't mean they're not out there. As to why people refer to the growths as eyes, the answer is obvious. Corn already claimed ears, broala staked out brows, tulips called dibs on lips, and no plant wanted noses. These eyes represent root buds that eventually make lots more potatoes. They're safe to eat as long as they're small and the tubers aren't soft or green. But cut them off if you're squeamish. Gathering moth. I just moved from Colorado to South Carolina, low country, so Spanish moss is foreign to me. Whenever I see it hanging from live oaks, it looks like the branch has died. What would you recommend to decrease the amount of it on my trees? Signed, Jesse. Taking this plant out of the low country is like absconding with Colorado's Rocky Mountain High. A majestic live oak draped with Spanish moss is a southern icon. Both are native and evolved together. Spanish moss uses the limbs for support and does not harm the tree. If you think there's too much of it, you can hire landscapers to remove it, but it will just grow back. I think you're going to have to learn to love it like we Southerners do. I do love it. And listeners, there was a cartoon that I forgot to describe that starts this section out, and it is a picture of two potatoes sitting at a cocktail table in a bar. In the background, there's a potato bartender mixing a drink, and there are shelves of different colors, bottles of all different colors behind that bartender. And then these two potatoes are talking to each other while they're holding on to their drinks in the foreground. And they're sitting at these lounge chairs, you know, the kind that have that curve up so that they are effectively arms of the chair, even though they're not. They're just high sides. Okay, so they're two rather feminine-looking potatoes, and one is saying to the other, "He told me I have the prettiest eyes." Yeah, like I haven't heard that one before. All right, the next article, the next letter, is Another Dead Rosemary. I live in southern New Hampshire. Each year, I buy a rosemary plant in the spring and then bring it indoors in the fall. Every December, I throw the poor dead thing out. It's terribly embarrassing. My great-grandmother brought hers inside every fall, parked it in a cold attic, and watered it occasionally. Hers always survived. Any advice? And that is signed, Rose. Nice to hear from a reader in the Granite State. A rosemary plant needs two things when it's growing indoors: a sunny window and well-drained soil. Water only after the top inch of dirt goes dry. I don't know how your granny kept hers alive in the attic. Perhaps she practiced the dark arts. Blueberry blues. For years, I've tried to grow blueberries here in Tennessee. They used to produce a good crop, but then the branches started dying back. I moved them to a different location, but the same thing keeps happening. Can you please help, Grumpy? Signed, Pat. In addition to acid soil with a pH of about 5, blueberry bushes need to have excellent drainage. If the ground stays too wet, that leads to root rot and dieback. Try planting yours a little bit high in the hole so that the top of the root ball is a half inch above the surrounding soil. Then add a layer of mulch over the ground. Apples for Verity. How do you grow apples in Northern Virginia? Signed, Verity, age 8. Verity, I am truly touched to receive your email. Apples are easy to grow where you live. Did you know that Virginia ranks 6th in apple production in the U.S.? The state has lots of beautiful orchards where you can pick fresh ones, too. In order for most of these plants to bear fruit, they have to exchange pollen with another apple selection. Bees will carry pollen from one tree to the next, so you'll need two different kinds placed no further than 100 feet apart. I suggest going with a Golden Delicious, which is yellow, and a Red Delicious, which is red. Choose a sunny spot where water doesn't puddle up long after it rains. For each plant, dig a hole that's 3 times as wide as the root ball, but no deeper. Place the tree in the middle of the hole. Fill in around it with soil. Use your foot to firm it up and water well. Finally, spread a 1-inch deep layer of mulch over the top of the dirt you just firmed. But don't let it touch the trunk. Good luck! And, listeners, here is Grumpy's Grape of the Month. And it's accompanied by a cartoon of... This must be Grumpy, Steve Bender. And he is sitting beside an overturned wheelbarrow. And there's something like, yep, it's a flower that seems to be laughing at him. All right, here's Grumpy's Grape of the Month. Certain plant nerds say you should always grow natives because they're easy, sometimes actually too easy. Case in point. Years ago, in a confounded act of neighborliness, I planted a native Yaupon holly, and listeners, that's spelled Y-A-U-P-O-N, Yaupon holly, in the yard across the street. It is female, so in fall and winter, it smothers itself with small, translucent red berries that birds eat and poop everywhere. Now I have Yaupon seedlings coming up all over, in my lawn, on my porch, and in my hair. Native Americans made a tea from its leaves in order to purge, which may have inspired its botanical name, Ilex vomitoria, or vomitoria. This is fitting, because every time I have to pull up another seedling, I want to hurl. And... here's a Know Your Plants footnote, sort of. It's in a column on the right side of this page. And it's accompanied with by a photo of a Japanese maple tree. It's a feathery red tree, very pretty. And then there's a small circle with a close-up of the leaves on this tree, which do indeed appear to be quite feathery, the individual leaves. And this is called Crimson Queen, Japanese maple. Throw away your pruners. This all-season beauty always knows its place. Looking for a tree to grow in a confined spot or a container? Here you go. Crimson Queen, Japanese maple. The Latin name is Acer palmatum, which means crimson queen. I have this tree and love it. A slow grower, it has reached 4 feet tall and 6 feet wide in 20 years, forming a mushroom-shaped mound of layered, cascading branches. Its finely cut leaves emerge wine red in the spring, from bronze red in the summer, and then brighten to blazing scarlet in the fall. Give it moist, well-drained soil in USDA zones 5 to 9. It takes a good deal of sun, but provide light afternoon shade in zones 8 and 9. Signed, Steve Bender, our grumpy gardener. And back to the beginning of this year, an article from Southern Living on cicadas. Cicadas are going to invade these southern states this summer. This is by Brandy Gruner, and it was published on January 20th, 2025. Remember the great southern brood last summer? You've been warned. Brood 19 is coming our way, and listeners, 19 is XIV. It's in the Roman numeral 19. We're talking about cicadas, of course. Those noisy insects that emerged from underground after 13 years to swarm the South. Not everywhere in the South experienced what was known as Brood 19, which is Brood XIX here, but Kentucky will get its turn at a cicada swarm this summer. According to Cicada Safari, a group of 17-year cicadas known as Brood 14, XIV, will emerge all over Kentucky and much of Tennessee. Brood 14 will also be seen, and very much heard, in western North Carolina and Virginia, too, as well as in parts of West Virginia and Maryland. The brood will emerge in a total of 13 states. These periodical, in quotes, cicadas, will be easy to tell apart from the ones that normally drone every summer. Annual cicadas are brown or green and have black or white markings. Periodical cicadas look very different, with black bodies, reddish bug eyes, and orange wing veins. The 17-year cicadas will emerge from the ground, leaving holes and small tunnels behind. The females lay eggs in trees. Once the nymphs hatch, they drop to the ground and dig down to feed on roots. There they stay for 13 or 17 years, depending on the species. Cicada Safari tracks the emergence of broods and is asking for the help of citizen scientists. You can use the free Cicada Safari app on your mobile device to report sightings this summer. All right, I guess that's not too bad to watch out for. Well, listen out for. And here's another article from that section. 5 areas in your home to declutter this winter. After the hustle and bustle of the holidays, plus the start of a new year, our homes can feel like a clean slate. For this reason, and because of the blustery wintertime weather, this season is one of the best times to declutter a few areas or possibly overhaul and reorganize another one inside our homes. The fridge and pantry may be overflowing and need a shakedown to toss what has expired. Or maybe there's a bigger job in a specific area. I see you under the bathroom sink, eyesore, that you've meant to tackle to make the space more functional. Winter is also a reflective time, making it perfect to rethink how your space supports your lifestyle, says Kanika Williams, an Atlanta-based professional home organizer and founder of Tidied by Kay. It's the season that allows us permission to rest, recharge, cook a cozy casserole, snuggle up with a blanket or by a warm fire to beat the wintertime blues. During this time, outdoor activities slow down and outdoor home maintenance activities are dormant. Indeed, in wintertime, we have the extra time to focus on spaces that might not be working. If the idea of organizing feels daunting, start with a small contained area like a drawer, shelf, or cabinet, she explains. If you're still unsure where to start, Williams suggests decluttering the following areas this winter. Under the bathroom sink. With rushing out the door for holiday activities, under the bathroom sink might be in disarray. This is a small, manageable area to start, Williams explains. Consider pulling everything out and assessing what you don't use. While you have everything pulled out, this is a good time to clean the inside of the drawers of cabinets, checking for any bottles that have tipped and spilled. Don't forget to toss any expired products. Make clear, make clear organizers under the sink in this space for optimal organization if you need them. Many times, vertical space under a bathroom sink is underutilized, and new organizers can help you access previously unreachable items and corral toiletries. Pantry and kitchen cabinets. Our pantries and kitchen cabinets can inevitably become cluttered quickly with meal prep or hosting during the holiday season. Winter is a great time to scan to see what you haven't used and donate or discard. Declutter expired foods, organize by categories, and create systems for your snacks, spices, and baking supplies, Williams suggests. Chances are, if you haven't used an item during the holidays, you aren't likely to use it during the year. Organize an overflowing utensil drawer by adding a kitchen cabinet organizer or drawer dividers to make the space more functional. And if you have an abundance of lids for pots, pans, casserole dishes, or food containers, then a lid organizing system might be opportune for keeping these useful items tidy. Bedroom closet. Whoa. It might be the last place we want to attempt to organize, but if it saves us time in the long run when dressing, then a closet clean out is an ideal area to declutter and reorganize. You might even find a few items you can immediately eliminate, including damaged or duplicate items, and even items that still have the tags. Winter is perfect for rotating out summer and spring clothes and ensuring your winter wardrobe is easily accessible, says Williams. Additionally, when rotating your wardrobe, donate items you haven't worn in the prior season. You will free up extra real estate within the closet and reduce clutter from unused items. Desk area. It's likely that with the hectic holiday season, plus any end-of-year festivities, the desk space in our homes has become cluttered and needs a refresh. Start the new year fresh by clearing out old paperwork, organizing your supplies, and creating an inspiring workspace, perfect for tackling those January resolutions, she says. There are some items that you don't want to just toss in the trash, including confidential documents. Shred any papers with personal information, and don't forget to dust your desk or home office space while organizing. This space often gets missed when cleaning because of paper clutter, so there's likely buildup on the desk and surrounding office space. Dust your desk. And finally, basement or storage area. In wintertime, a basement or storage area should be spruced up ahead of spring weather. Remember that winter decluttering helps you prep for spring, says Williams. When the weather is warmer in springtime, many of us focus on more outdoor activities and cleanup in our yards and gardens. The winter season is a great time to head to the basement or storage area to see what needs to be tossed, declutter holiday decor, while putting it away is even better, and prep or declutter gardening shelves or storage areas for spring planting time. And back to our November issue. This article is called Good Inside. Through her handcrafted pies, Natasha Burton aims to bring people together one slice at a time. And the text here is by Alana Al Hatlani. And the recipes are by Natasha Burton. Of these pies, there is a photo that's a page and a half wide and long. And in the background of the photo is a very homey-looking print wallpaper. It's blurred, but it is of cool teal tones, cool blues and greens. And it has a few pictures in square frames and oval wooden frames that are also blurred that are on the wall. And something that appears to be a heart-shaped fly swatter. That's what it looks like. And in the foreground, and there's a plant, a philodendron or a pothos plant. And in the background and in the foreground, we have a very happy woman, who must be Natasha Jackson. She is holding a pie in each hand. And she has long, dark hair. She's African-American, big smile, and she's wearing a dark green, forest green, tailored shirt and, what appears to be a brown leather skirt. And it's got imprinted on it some kind of a jacket, something like a jacket print. Can't really, just some abstract print there. But it's just embossed on there. It's just pressed in. And a scarf belt that's brown and white. The skirt is light brown. She has a white strap, appears to be a watch, on her left wrist. And she's holding her left hand high with a pie that has some frosting drizzled over it. Looks like some kind of a strudel. And these are in aluminum pans. And in her right hand, which is lower, is a pie that's got, I can tell you exactly, because I think, it has some cranberries. These are cranberries, and there's whipped cream all around it. And they're oats. They're made of oats. Because the recipes are here on the next page. We may get to them this week. If not, maybe next week. All right. It starts, and it seems to be narrated by our Natasha Burton. I started with an easy bake oven and used it until the light bulb burned out, says pastry chef Natasha Burton, the owner of Mixed Fillings Pie Shop in Jacksonville, Florida. It's fitting that her love of food began when she was a kid. Burton has a childlike playfulness that permeates her baking to this day. You won't find simple pumpkin, apple, or pecan pies among her offerings. The flavors are as creative as their names. Cookies and Dreams, which is cream cheese, brown butter, Oreo crust, and whipped cream. Or peanut butter and jealous, peanut butter mousse, ganache, Oreo crust, and Butterfinger flavored whipped cream, to name just two. The bakery was a pandemic pivot that was born from her desire to build something for herself, by herself. A trained chef, Burton fell into the pastry world. She graduated from Le Cordon Bleu Culinary School in Dallas and came up in the kitchen of renowned Texas chef Stephen Piles before transitioning to the sweet side. She was relegated to pie making at one of her first baking jobs. As with many professional kitchens, it was a trial by fire. And since she was an inexperienced cake decorator, she was assigned to churn out rustic, yet delicious, desserts. I was banished to the pie department, but turned it into my superpower, she jokes. In 2019, Burton relocated to Jacksonville, where she had family, with the intention of opening a cake shop before realizing that the city didn't have a good place to get a slice of pie. She launched Mixed Fillings in June 2020. Now a self-proclaimed pie-fessional, she teaches classes online to help other people overcome their anxiety and stress about working with pie dough. It's therapeutic once you get the hang of it, she says. In March 2023, she brought Mixed Fillings to the Five Points neighborhood. It quickly became a gathering place with a menu that regularly sold out. Unfortunately, building issues led Burton to close the location and move the bakery to a historic cottage in Jacksonville that she hopes to open late this year. In the meantime, you can order her creations online. And listeners, late this year meant last December. Okay, and we've run out of time for today's episode of Southern Living. Hope that you've enjoyed it. I'm Joanna LaForgia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. But listeners, you may want to note that right now it will be listed under Triangle Bulletin Board on the website. Our volunteer tech person hasn't yet gotten to relabel it. So for the last month or two, the issues will be under Triangle Bulletin Board, under specials, on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. Please call us at 919-832-5138. That number once more is 919-832-5138. So long until next time.